Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for being with us. Wherever you are, whenever you are, because people listen to the podcasts all different times from all over the world, and that's really exciting. So we're going to have a lot of fun tonight, and there will probably be a lot of laughter. My guest tonight is Frank Brown, and I've known Frank since the first day of high school, which is a really crazy long time ago. And his life has unfolded such that he is doing healing work, go figure. And we're going to talk about that. It's been an amazing voyage together. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing, which of course should be about friends. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that we don't find friends or make friends. We recognize friends or lovers or any of the important people in our lives. You just kind of see them for the first time and go, oh, it's you. I know you. I love you. I don't know why, but I love you. And what are we going to do together this time? And how long are we going to do it? And I've had that happen my entire life. And I think other people have it happen, but they just don't acknowledge it. So on the first day of high school, and just to back up a little bit, in New York City, where I was a child, there are a number of specialty high schools that focus on particular things, the arts, science, mathematics. And one of them is Brooklyn Technical High School, which is kind of both college prep and pre-engineering, or as I like to call it, Hogwarts for nerds. And, you know, you take a test for it. It's a real high-stress experience going to this big building and taking the test, and you have to wait for the results. And if you get it, it's a very big deal because people from all over the city of New York are vying for the limited number of places to go to that school for that freshman year. So on the first day of freshman year, in what they called prefect class, or some people would, your school might call it homeroom class, they had us all sit down and do the orientation stuff that they were going to do. And there were four of us that I think sat together that morning. And it was one of those recognition things. We knew that we were connected somehow. We were immediately friends. And over the course of the 4 years of high school, we basically became brothers. We called each other's parents mom and dad. We lived in each other's houses. It was just assumed that we would come and go like we lived there. And so I've known Frank now for, I won't even tell you how long because it's embarrassing how long we've known each other. And we came from the same part of Brooklyn, obviously, and we've known each other for all this time. So we went to high school together by subway. We also got into the same college in the City University and had a very long subway commute, which we also did together for another 4 years. So we hung out. We've been best friends for the better part of our lives. And, you know, he's my brother from another mother. When people hear us, and you'll have this experience during the interview, you can't tell who's who. You have to listen carefully to know whether it's David or Frank. And in person, we've had people, I introduce him as my brother, and then I say, no, that's a joke. He's not really my brother. And people will argue with us and think that we're kidding with them. So I don't know how this stuff works exactly, and this whole recognition thing and knowing you're supposed to be together and figuring out what the adventure is that you're doing together this time. And, you know, having we had a disagreement that lasted 10 years. But when you've known somebody for this many decades, that kind of gets lost in the wash. It doesn't matter. And I hope that your life is full of people that you recognize when you first meet them and acknowledge that you recognize them when you first meet them, and then go into the adventure of finding out what it is that you're supposed to do together this time, because you've known each other before. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing and kind of my introduction to my best friend, Frank Brown. Thanks for being on the show. We're going to have some fun.
I think so.
You think?
I think. We always do. Well, except for that 10-year period.
Except for that 10-year period and some of the union, but that's what being friends is about. And, you know, some people at this point may be saying, why in the world does he have his best friend on? But the story of the unfolding of your life is one of the is the eighth wonder of the world, as far as I'm concerned, because I know your background and who you were and what you went through when you were much younger. And the work that you're doing now is extraordinary, the healing work that you're doing. So I would love for you to do what guests typically do on the show, which is, you know, tell your story. But I'll start out with the little introduction that says, Frank was the most conservative human being I think I've ever known in my life, in terms of how he was raised, what life was like for him in high school and after high school for quite a while. And then things changed. So, tell us your story, Frank.
Yeah, I started out, we'll say I started out at Brooklyn Tech as a nerd with attitude. you would think in a school with 6,000 guys in it that they would figure out that out of 6,000 really bright individuals, at least some of us would have some attitude, and that was me.
It was Brooklyn, after all.
It was Brooklyn, right, exactly. So I didn't have any trouble with the academics, but I had trouble with some of the rules and regulations and some of the authority figures and teachers. At one point, one of the college advisors pulled me off to the side and said, Frank, and they never call you by your first name. They all you call always, you know, Mr. Brown, Mr. Farkas, Mr. Ehrlich, whatever. And he said, Frank, I knew it was big. And he said, he pulled me into his office and he said, do you know that the entire math department is out to get you? I said, the entire math department? Yes, they're out to get you. I was in the student lounge, the teacher's lounge, and I heard him talking about it. They're out to get you. I said, thank you very much, Mr. Sanders. I'll take care of it. He said, what? I said, thank you very much. That's good information. I'll take care of it. He said, well, don't you want me to talk to the principal or the vice principal? No, I got it. Talk about arrogance. And the scary thing was I did handle it. David and our friends, male and female, every one of them but me was raised by liberal Democrats, and everyone but me was Jewish. I'm the only guy I knew who had a persecution complex because he wasn't Jewish. And I was raised conservative. My parents were Republicans, and my aunts were very conservative. And so David's right. So we went to City College. I became, eventually after banging around, became an economics major, was accepted to the doctoral program, and started my doctoral studies when I was received a letter from the President of the United States that began, greetings from the President of the United States.
And never a good sign.
Yeah, and that was the I was drafted in the last draft call before the draft went to a lottery system. Not really wanting to let somebody else put a gun in my hands and tell me who to kill. That's a decision I reserved for myself. I decided to go into the Air Force, and then they decided I should be an officer. And I ended up being a navigator on KC-135 aircraft doing air-to-air refueling. So no gun in my hands and no weapons on the plane that I was part of. And that was my solution to the war in Vietnam problem. I didn't run to Canada. I didn't, you know, eat myself into a health deferment. I didn't do any of a number of things that people did to stay out of the army. I came from a military family. My father was in the military. My grandfather was in the military. It didn't really bother me. And my comment at the time was, I don't mind being shot at. I just mind being told who to shoot. And so, as David said, conservative, I came out of the Air Force and became a computer programmer in corporate America. Started off at the Hartford Insurance Group and continued for years and years and years.
And years.
You know, I'm coming up on 40 years as a programmer. I work with kids and I tell them when I started programming and they go, my parents weren't even married yet. And I just laugh and I said, yeah, remember that. So, I happen to be a Latter-day Saint, and there is very little weirdness in the life of a Latter-day Saint other than that, those peculiarities that are part of the church. So my life was, and no drinking, no smoking, no, you know, my life had become pretty white bread as can be. And then I got divorced. I went through a bankruptcy, was a cancer survivor, and got divorced at the age of 60 and found myself 60 and single. And one of the blessings that my wife gave me before we divorced was I had studied martial arts off and on for years, and one of the martial arts I studied was Tai Chi. And there was a priest or monk, ex-priest or ex-monk, from Wudang Mountain in China who had come to the United States and was teaching seminars on what was called Taoist metaphysical external qi healing or medical qi healing. And Susan saw, somebody put an advertisement in her office, and she said, oh, Frank will love that. So she told me I needed to pack up my bags to go to this three-day seminar up in some spa in the woods. And that was when things started to get weird. I didn't know why I was going. I thought I was going to get healed. I didn't know I was going to learn to do healing on other people. Sometime after that, and there wasn't just one three-day seminar. There were several seminars. And as a matter of fact, Master Chen now teaches a year-long class that you go, I think, a week at a time for. With a certificate program in this Taoist healing. And it's a very powerful energy healing. It uses the qi that we talk about when you talk about qigong, and it uses the acupuncture meridians and the organ systems in five element theory, as in traditional Chinese medicine. And so David came down and visited me when I here in Atlanta. And I did a session on Susan, and when I finished, David looked at me and said, do you have any idea how powerful that stuff you're doing is? To which I answered, no. And that's been my position pretty much along the way. I'm a left brain guy, and my left brain doesn't want any part of this right brain energy healing, airy-fairy, new age, woo-woo stuff, and unfortunately, I'm really good at it. And so as I learn different modalities in healing, I've seen miracles happen. Broken bones mend, long-term aches and pains disappear, just burns not materialize. They would normally just kind of go away. And healing at a distance, which is also something that is pretty bizarre in the medical world. So I learned, I studied this Taoist healing for a while. then somebody invited me. I learned about a thing called quantum touch, which is sort of like Reiki, only without the mysticism. And I think what happened is I found Reiki and got attuned and became a Reiki master. And then I was looking at Reiki on the internet and saw I found this quantum touch because they called it Reiki on steroids. It was after learning quantum touch that the bone healing took place. And, you know, that's okay if it happens to other people. If David told me he worked on somebody and they had a broken bone, and when he finished, the bone wasn't broken anymore, I'd go, right on, David. But when I did it, it was like, oh, crap. Because I so much didn't want this stuff to be true. So quantum touch, Reiki, quantum touch, 2007. Oh, no, another thing, Robert Detzler's spiritual response therapy, which is done with pendulums and dowsing on charts in a book, also a very powerful modality, a form of soul recovery. And then the divorce, and then an invitation to join the Modern Mystery School, which turned out to be a much bigger step than I thought at the beginning. Sometime previous, my Susan, who was a chiropractor, had a massage therapist who was a healer in the mystery school, and she did a thing on Susan and I called we call it now a life activation. At the time, it was called a DNA activation, which basically turns on your spiritual DNA, gives you a stronger connection, clears out the cobwebs, and connects you, gives you a firmer connection with whatever you want to call the power that runs the universe, God, your higher power, the universe, creator, Elohim, Ensof, whatever you want to call it. And it was okay. And she kept asking us if we wanted to take the next step, which was what's now called an Empower Thyself class, an initiation. And neither one of us was really interested. Suddenly, after I got divorced, it sounded like a really good idea. And what was funny was it sounded like a really good idea to Susan also. But I thought, no, that doesn't sound right for Susan. And sure enough, she changed her mind. But a mystery school is a thing that I don't know if everybody knows about. The most famous one that I know of is the Golden Dawn, which was came in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And much of the magic that is in the world today that people perform, ritual magic, and came from the Golden Dawn's teaching that was brought out by a man named Israel Regardi. And this is a mystery school that is much like the Golden Dawn. We study Kabbalah, we study Tarot, we study astrology, and we do ritual magic. We also do many forms of energy healing that were handed down through the lineage of King Solomon. Now things really got to be weird. I thought they were strange before, but I can't even begin to describe the change it made in my life. I actually got, in corporate America, you get performance reviews, and there's always one level of review that they only give to, like, you know, the top 1%. They just don't ever give it out. It's the walks on water and his sandals don't even get wet review. And after being in the mystery school for about a year and a half, I got that review because of the changes they saw in me, which I credit the mystery school with and with my activity in the mystery school. And there are levels, and there are levels of healer, and there are levels of what's called a ritual master. And I progressed through the levels, and in 2012, went to Japan for the second time with the mystery school to participate in a 26-hour ritual to help the world through the energy shifts that it's going through. And it was the most amazing experience of my life. We trained very hard for several years. The training was time-consuming and expensive, and really, really hard. I don't regret a minute of it. And as a matter of fact, for those of you who have seen my Facebook page, the picture on the page in the background where all those people are standing around, that was the day after in Tokyo, which was my 65th birthday. And so I had a my story is that I had a birthday sleepover with 300 of my closest friends, followed by a catered breakfast brunch. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And the Japanese were wonderful. I love the Japanese. So, and the growth continues. I've recently, you had Ursula Lentini on your show, and I recently got involved with Twin Hearts Meditation and Pranic Healing through Ursula. And Twin Hearts Meditation is an incredible thing. And so is Pranic Healing. It's just, it's another energy healing method, similar in some ways to Reiki. Very varied, very powerful. And what it led me back to is the Mystery School has a preferred lineage of Reiki, which is called Jigeden Reiki, which is direct transmission Japanese Reiki. All Western Reiki comes through Mrs. Takada, who was taught by Mr. Hayashi, who was a student of Usui himself. And there were many, for most of us, there are many, many, many teachers in between us and Mrs. Takada. Usui Reiki, Jikiden Reiki, there was Usui, there was Mr. Hayashi, the same Hayashi, and Mrs. Yamaguchi, and Tadeo Yamaguchi, and my teacher, and then me. So I'm like six in the lineage. And Tadeo Yamaguchi, who I believe is five in the lineage, teaches all the teachers. If you're going to become a Jikiden Reiki teacher, at some point you train with Tadeo Yamaguchi. And the lineage is clean, and the energy is just incredible. So I was a Shodan for a while, and did that, and just recently took Okudan, which enables you to do the psychological stuff and the distance stuff, and it was an amazing class. And so here I am, 67 years old. People have started paying me for my skills, and it's amazing. I just remember all the times you said, "Welcome to my world."
What are you doing here? Yep, exactly. We're going to go to a break soon. I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you, and you don't have a website up yet. But we did set up an email for you, and that email is
frank.brown@xemaps.com.
And so that's the most straightforward way of getting in touch with Frank for any of this. He's also on Facebook pages.
I have Frank Brown, which is was originally for people like my boss and my relatives and those kind of people who didn't need to know what I was into. And then there's Frank Hermes. Hermes is my initiatory name. And Frank Hermes is for all my friends in the Modern Mystery School all over the world. South Africa, Ireland, England, Buenos Aires, Japan. We get around. Canada, we get around.
You do get around.
We do.
So when we come back, we'll kind of talk about the stuff that you're doing now and where you're going, because that's fascinating too. So we will be back shortly, unless of course we get taller, with Frank Brown, who is my brother from another mother and best friend, and we will have more on Empower Radio with the Farkas Files. Don't go nowhere.
this week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold.
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree. Yes. That one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my brother from another mother, Frank Brown, who does amazing healing work. And, yeah, we were just talking about that whole thing that kept happening where you would start some new thing and explain it to me, and I'd go, yeah, welcome to my world.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know how much you've talked about your world, but it sure was a strange introduction for me, and also seeing some of our old friends' reactions to it, you know.
which was sort of, oh no, not him too.
Yeah, exactly. but it's a funny thing. Okay, so left brain Frank doesn't believe in woo-woo stuff, blah, 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 which isn't exactly true, because Latter-day Saints have a healing modality that's part of the church that's done by two holders of the higher priesthood with an anointing of oil and a blessing, and it's an integral part of the church. And my first healing miracle occurred shortly after I'd become active in the church again, after I'd married Susan and out in Indianapolis. So that was actually my introduction to alternative or complementary healing. Was in the church while I was still actively engaged in the church, and I still consider myself a Latter-day Saint. Nothing I do is in conflict with what I learned in the church, and everything I do, you know, from a Christian perspective. Remembering all the while that Christ was Jewish, You know, it's a strange world out there. And now I'm 67 years old, and I'm like, God, if I never wrote another report program again, it would be too soon. But bankruptcy and the divorce and all of that stuff, what am I going to do to, oh, Frank, you're a healer. What?
Right.
And so I guess my goal is to, in order to touch people in the state of Georgia, you have to have a massage therapist license. And I used to do massage therapy in my wife's office. And gee, what a surprise. I'm really good at that too. So I'll probably get, over the next couple of years, get licensed as a massage therapist so that I can do the stuff that I do without being thrown into jail because I touched somebody. Wow. I mean, so, yeah. And I still go up to Toronto, which is the North American headquarters for the Mystery School, and recertifying the things that I do and hang out with and receive just incredible teaching. Speaking of brother from another mother, when I met the actual head of the Mystery School, a gentleman named, he might object to being called a gentleman, a man called Goodney Goodnesson. I found out that Goodney had, you know, the Mystery School started and became more active in, the Mystery School's been here for a long, long time, but the Mystery School in its modern, its most recent incarnation or avatar or whatever it is, started in Utah. The older people in the school that I know were talk about being with Goodney back in the Utah days. Huh. And like me, he was a Latter-day Saint, and he worked in the temples just like I do, and we talked about that. And I have that same feeling like, boy, I knew you someplace before.
Right.
And I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, and I love him like a brother and a friend. He's been a tremendous influence on my life, and for the better. And it's kind of fun because I'll go out on the internet and there'll be all this Modern Mystery School is a scam, and Goodney Goodnesson is that, and Goodney Goodnesson is this, and the Modern Mystery School is a cult, and the Primitive Christian Church was a cult. It's like people say to me, oh, people have told me the Mormon Church is a cult. I can remember having somebody look at me and said, you belong to a cult. And I said, yes, I do. And I know where you live. You know, it's
which
cult
is always a great line.
Right. Cult is a generic term. And depending on which of the many aspects of a group you pick to call it a cult, it could be a bad thing or it could be a good thing. It depends on so many different things. And generally, I would agree that the cults I've seen, like the Davidian thing and the Jonestown thing and the guys that were going to climb on the, you know, no, that's a bad thing. But nothing, you know, there's no coercion in the Mystery School, and there's none of the things that would make it a cult, in my estimation, other than the fact that we do have a charismatic leader,
right?
And you know,
and you do, so. and you do secret things, which creep people out because they're secret.
You know, but the stuff that the priest did in the temple was secret, and
right.
This I hate to tell you, but the stuff that the mechanic does on your car to you is a secret, and the stuff that the guy does, who the guys who used to repair televisions back when you could repair that stuff, and the technicians that work on the phones and on the internet and the Wi-Fi, that's secret. That's occult stuff. But you go to the wall and flip the switch and the light comes on and you have no idea. Well, you do, David, but you have no idea what goes into making that light come on.
Right.
And why it's AC and not DC, and why we didn't pay any attention to Tesla and all of that stuff.
Right. And part of that is the the school that we went to and what we learned along the way. But what's the quote? Any technology that's sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic.
My dad said we'd run into aliens someday and we wouldn't have enough intelligence to be able to push their buttons. I think he was right.
I think that's probably true. I wanted to kind of go back to your programming because you've kind of skipped over it and people don't get who you are and what you do. I'll give you my version and you can correct me. You're someone that they call a legacy programmer. You know all the languages that nobody is being taught anymore.
No, I know the language that nobody is being taught anymore.
So there, all the guys in India who are the hotshots call Frank the Frank.
But even they don't want to learn it and don't want to work on it.
Right.
And there's millions of lines of code out there that's still in it. So I'm a dinosaur.
Well, except what I say about you when you say you're a dinosaur is you're a pterodactyl. You're a freaking flying dinosaur.
No, I'm a velociraptor.
You know things that that most people in the computer industry haven't been around long enough to forget.
The thing is, you know, I just went from being the subject matter expert in the particular area I worked in at the company I work for now to moving into a different area of the company, different, you know, system completely, where I know absolutely nothing. And that was a tremendous shock to my system. But they kept saying, it's okay. You carry so much stuff with you that you're going to be a big contributor in the group. And I'm starting to catch on that what they mean when they say that. Mm-hmm. But I started programming computers back when we still did everything on IBM cards.
Right.
And, you know,
punch cards and paper printouts.
Punch cards and paper printouts, and you might get to run your program if you were testing it once a day. And now stuff that would take hours to run runs in minutes, and you don't worry about any of that stuff. I had an iPod mini. It had more storage than the desktop I had used a couple of years before. I mean, the industry has changed so much, and yet if you're going to write a business program and it's going to do business things, COBOL is the obvious choice because it has all the business terms in it. The commands involve business stuff. So very often we find they've put really, really great marvelous event-driven GUI front ends that go out and access COBOL stuff. But that's right. Changing. That's changing. And I'm watching it change. And the funny thing is all the problems and all the craziness that I was around when we solved it in the mainframe world exists in the server-based technology and the internet stuff. And they haven't solved it yet. And right. The issue is the technology changes so fast, it's hard for them to keep up. But I'm having lots of fun.
And there aren't many people like you that can look at it and go, oh, it's one of those.
Yeah, you know, you say that, but I know some absolutely brilliant people who young guys who are just do magical things on computers. As a matter of fact, my roommate, Rob, who is also a member of the Mystery School and done some even crazier stuff than I've done, is just absolutely brilliant. He writes, you know, security stuff like, you know, the equivalent of SSL certificates and stuff like that on his own that has been looked at by professionals and gotten him hired, and he just his ability to absorb languages and figure out what a computer, what internet and server technology is doing just absolutely blows me away.
Yeah. Yeah, there are lots of people that are really good at all kinds of things. But
if it's a COBOL program, talk to me.
The thing about you that I find fascinating that I don't know that you notice is the parallel between your knowledge of computers and your intuitive abilities in getting all that stuff done and this whole new realm of healing that you've gone into.
I am aware of it only because one of the managers I worked for, who was the lady that attended your wedding with me, Marty Ryan. Mm. Marty Ryan said I was the most the best intuitive problem solver she had ever worked with. Susan said I was the best intuitive massage therapist that she had ever come across. And, you know, it goes into the world of healing also. The other thing is my approach to organizations is the same everywhere. I ask the questions that nobody else will ask.
Right.
And I figure that's my job. That's, you know, unfortunately, sometimes management doesn't agree with me, but sometimes
doesn't want to hear the questions. Yeah. It's,
And as a result, I stopped asking questions for a while, and management came to me and said, you know, you haven't asked any of those pointed questions in a long time. And I said, yeah, well, you called me a loose cannon 3 times. I can take a hint. And they said, oh, I'm sorry. It seems that we've come in the way of your expressing yourself, and we're really sorry. We would like you to go back to giving that kind of feedback. And I was really impressed with that in corporate America. Definitely. I worked for some fabulous people. I have to say that.
Well, you know, you've got the attitude that you've been working on for a really long time.
I have.
And all your programming background and your intuition, and you're an MBA, which is not the guy that they expect to have sitting as one of the other folks who's not in management, just hanging out around a conference table. They really don't know who they're dealing with.
I have a long history of stuff. It's true. And it all comes into play, just like when I'm doing healing. The fact is that as a Melchizedek high priest, I have some authority with working with the angels that, you know, other people don't have, often comes in very, very handy when working with people who are in a bad way.
Yep.
Because we're not talking about, we haven't mentioned the spooky stuff.
Oh, let's talk about the spooky stuff.
Well, you know, I'm kind of fine with not talking about the spooky stuff. I have friends that are really into, I shouldn't put it that way. I have friends who do that much more successfully than I do. I always say that I have the psychic sensitivity of a stone, and that I might be doing stones a disservice in saying that, because for all I know, stones are very psychic. I certainly know crystals are. And they give me, I love it. My friends give me this look like, oh God, he's saying that bullshit again. But it all goes away when I'm healing.
Right.
And so healing is what I do. When it comes to the spooky side of things, I that's not where my sensitivity is. And so I've had to accept not being one of the people that bumps back in the night when things go bump in the night, which is what I really wanted to do because it's cool. But, you know, that's not my role in this life. In this life, I'm a healer. And I love it.
Yeah, it's all healing, but yeah.
And the I still get the occasional hit contract.
Yeah, the bumping back has its romance, but it's also just dirty. It's not really fun.
No, and my dear friends who have much more experience in it than I can even begin to understand have been very clear in explaining that to me. And I finally accepted their guidance.
Well, that's, you know, I get, for me, every once in a while, I get someone who says, I want to do what you do. And my immediate response to them is, no, you don't. You don't have any idea what I do. And if you knew what I did, in all likelihood, after the romance of it wore off, you would go screaming into the woods with your hair on fire, which probably would be the best response.
Yeah, I don't want to do what you do.
And, you know, that's kind of my metaphor. If people are still running into the woods with their hair on fire, they're probably not ready.
That's true.
And, you know, once you can be confronted with the really weird stuff and just kind of go, oh, really? Huh. Let's see. What do we have to do now? It's if you can't do that, it's dangerous. Even if you can do that, some of it's dangerous.
Sure is. And, you know, there's a wonderful line in the movie Constantine where he's talking to the police officer who wants to get her psychic powers back. And he looks at her and he says, you know, there's no turning back. You see them, they see you.
Yeah.
And I'm her before she gets the crash course. I don't see them. And I've decided I'm okay with that because I see what it's like to see them, and I'm fine just the way. Thank you very much.
Well, seeing, you know, everybody thinks that seeing and hearing is being psychic, in quotation marks. And there are so many other kinds of sensitivity that will give you the same information. And the seeing and the hearing part can be overwhelming and really distracting.
Yeah, and in my case, I have stuff talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a little distracting too sometimes. But, you know, I just suddenly know stuff, especially where healing is concerned. And, you know, one of the things is we get etheric structures on our bodies or in our bodies or around our bodies. And the people I know who work on that sort of stuff you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I know who work on that sort of stuff refer to it as etheric surgery. And most of them can see what they're working on. They may see it differently between them, what they see and as they're working.
Right.
But I've been put in a position where I needed to do that. And I don't see it, but I work on it. I know where it is. I can feel it. I can sense it. I'm being guided.
Yeah.
But so I can do it. That's just not the direction I want to go in. Although, like I said, you know, battlefield triage, you do what you got to do.
And you're very good at it. You know,
I'm the medic with the sword.
Yep.
And I'm okay with that.
So it's fascinating hearing you talk about what I've watched unfold. Because your way of thinking about and talking about is very different from my sense of it. So,
well, I'm pretty casual about it, but this has been a fundamentally life-changing series of events that have transformed me from being a pretty much self-absorbed, self-centered geek, nerd, you know, computer nerd that, you know, everything was right in his world and You know, if you guys thought everything was going to hell in a handbasket, to hell with you, it's good for me, to becoming much more outward looking. My heart is open. I have much more compassion and awareness than I did before. I have much more love for my brothers and sisters and that are out there, every one of them fighting a hard battle. And I learned this sensitivity to the struggles of others over the past several years. A lot of it I learned from my friends in the mystery school, from my teachers.
And it's been a long, strange trip, which is
what I put
as the title of the post I did.
And the strange thing is you have a sense of continuity.
Right.
I'm still the punk kid that played guitar on stage with you in Brighton Beach, Sheepshead Bay, wherever it was.
Coney Island.
Coney Island. And we had three-piece matching, three-piece corduroy suits.
Oh, God, I forgot about those.
Yeah.
I remember the maroon velour tops, but I didn't remember the corduroy suits. Oh, God.
Well, we got them because we were going to do some performing at City College.
Right. Absolutely.
It was better than the Eisenhower jackets and the berets.
That's right. But I think we've now given people way too much to think about.
Most of them don't know what an Eisenhower jacket is, so I think we're probably safe.
That's probably true. My guest tonight has been Frank Brown, who, as you can tell, is a very good friend of mine. Frank, thanks so much for being on the show and sharing your journey. If you want to get in touch with Frank, you can email him at frank.brown@xemaps.com. And stay on the line with us, and we'll talk after we go off to the air. If by any chance you got curious about what in the world does this guy David do, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology that I have come up with for you to get in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. And that allows you to tell me what's going on, you know, for us to have a phone conversation, make an appointment for phone conversation, and talk about whatever is going on with a person, place, situation. I was just talking to somebody about objects that were haunted. Pretty much any crazy thing that's going on. I'll do an assessment of what's happening and how my work might be helpful, and we can talk about how to go from there. If you want to know more about the show, go to thefarkasfiles.com, and you'll find the archive going back, I think it's 4 years now. I'm going to have to find out because I don't even remember anymore. Hundreds and hundreds of interviews with amazing people. This show will be posted there. All the other shows are posted there. You can also find us on iTunes Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and almost every other streaming media service out there. Search for Empower Radio or The Farkas Files, and you'll find it on Empower Radio. The Farkas Files runs at 9 p.m. every night with a new live show every Thursday. So the archived shows are running constantly at 9 p.m., which is really exciting. And the thing that is so exciting to me about this show is that people are listening to it at all different times, all over the world. When I get the numbers, it's amazing to me where people are and when they pick up the show, and that's really exciting. I'm so glad that we can do this. It's like having a conversation, as Frank would say, with 3,000 of my closest friends every month. So thanks so much for listening in. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.